Welcome to the podcast, Your Time with James Sweetman. Each week, my guests and I share stories, challenges, and vulnerabilities, all with the aim of helping us to live in a more soulful, authentic, and integrated way. So thank you for tuning in. Let's jump into this week's episode. This week's podcast is another one of those episodes that perhaps on face value appears odd, especially as someone who works in the personal development industry and who's always had an innate curiosity and interest in self-development. But the question I'm posing and pondering is, am I addicted to self-improvement? It's based on the thinking that too much of anything is not so good. And in many ways, it follows on from the podcast from a few weeks ago, where I looked at habits and in particular, the life-draining power of habits. I've worked full-time in the personal development industry now for 20 years. Over that time, self-improvement and well-being has become part of the vernacular. When I first started as a coach, few people knew what I did. I had to explain that I wasn't a counsellor and I'd use sports as an analogy, giving people a reference point for my role as a coach. Now there's a far better understanding and people see having a coach, whether it's a business coach, an executive coach, a life coach, as something quite normal. In the last 10 or 15 years, just as concepts like well-being and mindfulness have taken hold, social media has fueled feelings of lack of worthiness as we compare other people's show reels with our behind the scenes. And that lack of worthiness is for many people their entry point into the world of self-improvement. Of course, self-help is a noble pursuit. We're helping ourselves to make the most of our life experience, to establish habits and routines that help us achieve goals, desires and dreams, all with the ultimate objective of feeling better, whether that's happiness or fulfillment or whatever term we use. But we can also set ourselves up for a never-ending cycle, a quest to fix ourselves or to find another piece in the puzzle that is life. We'll get into the habit of setting one day I'll goals that keep us striving but never arriving. And the whole strive until you arrive mindset is the foundation for a lot of personal development books, courses and workshops. It presupposes that who you are isn't enough. When I work with clients or speak with groups, I usually open with the principle that is central to all I do, which is that you are perfectly yourself, but like all of us, still a work in progress. There is nothing to fix, only adjustments that you believe will be helpful, a little fine-tuning, or as I sometimes phrase it, an update to the operating system. We'll iron out a few bugs and install some new capabilities. As with any industry, there are toxic aspects to the world of personal development. There are individuals and organizations more than willing to take advantage of vulnerable people. They'll dangle unrealistic promises and peddle snake oil and pyramid schemes. Caveat emptor, let the buyer beware is always sound advice. I was reminded recently of a case study I read a few years ago about a weight loss company. Whilst on the surface it was selling the ability to lose weight, get fitter and feel better, but what they were really selling was the dream of losing weight and how that would make you feel. It's the sense of transformation that was emphasized in their adverts and marketing. But they didn't necessarily want people to lose weight or get fit. They wanted people to buy into the dream and to keep buying their services. That same approach is pervasive on social media. It's at the heart of all infomercials, and it's embedded in the self-improvement industry. Buy this, subscribe to this, sign up for that, and your life will be better. You'll be slimmer, fitter, richer, find the partner of your dreams, or that all-encompassing term, more successful. Now, over the years, I've bought the books, hundreds of them. I've attended seminars on three continents. I've signed up for countless courses, joined the communities and newsletters, and I don't think there's an alternative therapy that I've not tried. I don't regret any of them. With few exceptions, they were all value for money. I learned loads and they had a positive impact on me. Yes, some longer lasting than others, but as I say, they were all worthwhile. But I can also see that when slick marketing meets a genuine desire for self-improvement, that's perhaps based on low self-worth, well, it becomes easy to hand over more of our time and money in a quest for a quick fix. I know one of my tendencies is to look outside of myself for answers that can only be found on the inside. And this is true for many other people too. As I say to all my clients, you are the expert in being you, and no one outside of you can tell you what's important to you or what's right for you. But there are times when we need a hand to guide us or reassure us. But as I say, I know my pattern. I'll search through the books for answers or insights. I'll look for the elusive Oprah quote or the Wayne Dyer nugget of wisdom that I believe will help me validate my opinion, label my feelings, or more often than not, give me the permission to heed my own instincts and listen to my own wisdom. What I've learned from 20 years in the personal development field is that the more we look outside of ourselves, the more we lose trust in our own worth and in our own wisdom. Now, you know me, I love my books, I love learning, so this natural curiosity I'd never swap. But too much of anything is not so good. Reading and underlining a self-help book or dipping into a resource or a weekly newsletter or tuning into a podcast can be a great positive touchstone, a chance to reflect and learn and pick up some tips and insights. But craving advice and frantically searching outside ourselves for elusive answers is where we begin to run into trouble. When does a pleasurable social drink or two grow into something more problematic? Or when does the satisfaction of putting the hours in at work drift into workaholism? The same is true for self-improvement. Over the last 10 years, we've all become addicted to our mobile phones. We get the dopamine hit and then we crave more. We get the buzz of a self-help seminar and then we crave more, and many organisations know this. They'll want you to sign up for the next course when you're still buzzing from the last one. Now, there's nothing wrong with this. It's marketing, it's business. But we tend to know when someone is interested in us and not just in our ability to spend money with them. Over the years, there isn't a motivational quote I've not collected, a slogan I've not affirmed. You know them too. Stop playing small, follow your bliss, set compelling goals, join the 4 a.m. club, take massive action, keep hustling, do what it takes. The only failure is not trying. You know, you'll miss 100% of the shots you don't take. I could go on. There is truth in all of these, but life is more complex and we're more complex than adages that can be printed on a tea towel or shared on Instagram. There is the phrase, the more you learn, the more you realise you don't know. When the world of coaching opened up for me, I felt I'd found my tribe. That door opened into NLP and from there CBT and even Reiki. All pursuits I loved and enjoyed and was able to share with my clients. The more we learn, the more terminology we have for the challenges we face. But the more we learn, the more courses we do, the more articles or books we read, the more we can uncover a new problem we didn't know we had, but one that needs an immediate solution. Maybe I label this self-improvement hypochondria. I know for me, I've gone from perfectionism being my issue to replacing it with the need for control. I progressed through imposter syndrome, and then it was all about honouring my values. And I was in my 30s before I knew what my values were, and in my 40s before I realised that they can actually change. We are always more complex than the labels we place on ourselves, or even worse, the labels someone else places on us. Some labels give us permission to bed down and be the role model for it. If I'm this, then of course I'm going to do that or respond that way. Forgetting that we always have the freedom of choice, the ability to change and to expand beyond any label that maybe only exists, so it's easier for others to categorize us. You can probably tell that this is a topic I've been pondering, but going back to the question for this week, am I addicted to self-improvement? Let me pose another question. Well, what am I seeking to improve? Ultimately, it's always a variation of seeking the freedom to be unapologetically ourselves, to feel loved, seen, validated, and to have that sense that we belong. Coaching, counselling, whatever the therapy of choice is, we seek ways to free ourselves from the ghosts of the past and the fears of the future. Consciously or unconsciously, we just want to feel more peaceful in the present. Today, more than ever, we're bombarded with messages of how we can do or be better, how to increase some things like our bank balances or decrease others like our weight, how to be more of something and less of something else. I do believe that the desire to improve is one that is inbuilt. It's how we evolve individually and as a species. We are designed to grow. Not evolving leads to stagnation, being stuck in a rut, bored, or that sense that life is just passing us by. But as I say, too much of anything is not so good. So what might be some of the telltale signs that what started out as self-improvement has become a habit that is no longer serving you? Or worse, you've developed a self-improvement addiction. Now, an obvious place to start is by being honest with yourself. If you're reading the books, attending the workshops, and not putting anything you're learning into practice, well, what's the point? People who are addicted to self-help will often pick up loads of books and read them because it makes them feel like they're making some progress towards a goal or a change that they're really avoiding. It's like preparing to run the marathon. You buy the gear, but you never lace up the trainers. Or your kitchen is full of glossy cookbooks, but you never try a recipe. We've heard of the phrase knowledge is power. Well, not really. Knowledge is potential power. You have to do something with it. The power or the empowerment comes with the application of knowledge. Another sign that we may be out of balance is by asking ourselves, what am I sacrificing or what has been the cost of my focus on self-improvement? Time carved out for a wellness routine or a morning ritual that sets you up for the day is great. Beating yourself up for not getting up at 5 a.m. to start the day like a champion, or pressurizing yourself to exercise, journal, meditate, take a cold shower, do some Wim Hof breathing, well, maybe all that's a little too much. When your self-improvement efforts become weighty habits that consume you, crush your free time, or start to make you feel overwhelmed, guilty, or less than worthy, well, then it's not self-improvement, it's self-sabotage or self-defeating. If you are missing social gatherings, time with family, or falling down on some of your responsibilities because you're working on your self-improvement, well, you know, you're possibly paying too high a price for your discipline. Remember, trees that are rigid break. The trees that survive storms are flexible and can bend. Many of my clients speak about getting focused. Focus is good because it gives us agency and momentum and direction. Focus is all about having less thoughts and usually less unhelpful thoughts. But too much focus and we can become blinkered. A constant focus on the next thing, the next goal, the next achievement means we're missing out on the present, the only location of the joy in life. I remember a few years ago, a young woman attending a seminar I was giving on goal setting, and she shared that she had set herself a goal to get a promotion at work. She went for the job and didn't get it. Weeks later, she was still feeling low and disappointed and was wondering whether it was worthwhile ever setting goals again. Her heart was in the right place, but her focus was blinkered. Her real goal was career advancement. The job she'd gone for was just one job. There were others in our company and in other companies, and as strange as that might sound, she'd never even considered that. It was like having the goal to get a specific car, not seeing that there are other makes and models out there. There was another person I met at a conference a while ago, and he was somewhat scarily focused. We were both attending the event and we were sitting beside each other and there was desks in front of us. And the next minute, out from his bag, he takes a framed photograph of a mansion, which apparently he carried around with him. It was his goal to live in this mansion and to own the Ferrari and the helicopter that was in the picture too. Well, you do you, I thought to myself. Even back then, I thought his energy was one of lack and not one of abundance. And there was too much ego involved. You know, doing whatever it takes was his mantra. But at that extreme and that degree of focus, you know, people will trample over other people. They'll cross not just ethical lines, but even criminal ones too. I'm all for positivity and optimism, but there's only so far that blind optimism and positive thinking and the law of attraction will go. Am I manifesting or just being lazy? Am I going with the flow, being open to receiving, or merely grifting? If people who care for you have started to comment that your attitude is somewhat delusional or cult-like, or as I call it, the glassy eyes of fundamentalism, then maybe it's time to put the self-help books down. Another warning sign is that you feel worse rather than better on your own self-improvement journey, and maybe even that your health is taking a downward turn. I was reading on a news site last week how a young woman narrowly avoided death because she'd ignored medical advice and was choosing to rely solely on alternative practices to cure her cancer. Now, as someone who has had their own cancer journey, I'm fully open to alternative perspectives, but I won't be so blinkered or maybe even so arrogant to discount the advice of qualified medical professionals. There will always be outliers and we'll always find evidence to support our beliefs, but not all wisdom is in the one school. Something else we have to be mindful of is that what might work for you may not work for others. I know I've given gifts of books and even tickets for seminars to friends and family, thinking that they would find them helpful, as I had done, only to learn that the book was never opened or that they never went to the seminar. So even though our intentions can be noble, self-improvement may not be important to others. Some people are not ready to let go of their suffering. We are all on our own paths in life, and we travel those paths at our own pace. Of course, our zeal for self-improvement can mean we dispense advice even when it's not asked for. When a friend tells us their problems and we immediately tell them what they should do, well, that's not always helpful. We don't want to be too quick in offering quick solutions. Back when I was first diagnosed with bladder cancer, I remember a friend saying to me, "Well, James, how did you attract that into your life?" It wasn't what I needed to hear at the time. As the saying goes, for the person with only a hammer, every problem becomes a nail. Something else we should never forget is that self-help gurus don't have all the answers to life. There is that phrase that maybe you should never meet your heroes. Well, I don't know. Over the years, I've met many people in the self-help industry, renowned authors and conference speakers. Some were just wonderful, authentic, genuine, exactly as you'd expect them to be. Others were narcissists. Let's remember that no one person has a monopoly on wisdom. So-called self-help gurus are still people. Their insights can be profound, but they're not perfect. In recent times, I've become more interested in the guide by my side rather than the sage on the stage. Something that reminds me to lean away from the self-help literature and the self-improvement mindset is recognizing those times when I feel dissatisfied or self-critical. Even though most people would tell me that I'm looking well, doing well, or even that I'm an inspiration to them. Wanting to improve ourselves is no bad thing. However, when all our efforts are focused on improving thoughts, behaviours and habits, it's easy to overlook everything we do well every day and everything that's worth celebrating. If the message that's being reinforced for us is that we're never enough, apart from this feeling overwhelming and exhausting, it will always cause us to question, well, when will I ever be enough, or when will I be sorted or worthy? Whereas the truth is, you are enough, irrespective of whether you pick up a self-help book, attend a personal development course or not. We should never trade happiness for the pursuit of happiness. Of course, we can always become fitter or more successful or more attractive or more fulfilled. But if we're not happy, what good is it? The self-help industry can easily fuel feelings of inadequacy, even when we've so much to be proud of or to be grateful for. And that brings me into the antidote for an over-reliance on self-improvement, and that's self-acceptance. Accepting ourselves doesn't mean that we stop growing. It simply means that we're able to look at the big picture and acknowledge our strengths, along with everything we do well every day, as well as those areas that we would like to enhance or fine-tune. Through self-acceptance, we reassure ourselves that we have value and worthiness without needing to be productive or perfect. And the more we practice self-acceptance, the more we allow others around us to do the same. As ever, our emotions will be a signpost. If I'm doing something, signing up for a workshop or reading a popular psychology book or joining a community, if I'm doing that from a place of curiosity, possibility, fun or excitement, well, that's wonderful. If I'm grasping for something or fearing that I'll miss out or that I'll look bad in the eyes of others, well, maybe that fear-based motivation is not so helpful. So a few final thoughts to close out this week. How much more liberating it would feel to replace some of our shoulds with maybes or conscious choices. Rather than moving quickly, could I move more purposefully? Rather than being some goal-focused robot, can I recognize my humanness and how I'm still as worthy on those days when I just turn over in bed and sleep in without having to justify it to myself by declaring that I've earned it? Let me remember that time is not money. Money is money. Time is far more precious. as we strive to be productive or perfect, could we work on being a little more perceptive? Rather than being disciplined, can I be discerning? And if I look outside of myself for answers, can I remember to look within as well? In pulling my thoughts together for this week's episode, I came across these two quotes that were just so apt. The first is by the 13th century Sufi scholar and poet Rumi. I love these few lines from his poem, Unfold Your Own Myth. Rumi writes, "Don't be satisfied with stories, how things have gone with others. Unfold your own myth, without complicated explanation, so everyone will understand the passage we have opened for you." I love those lines. The authors, the poets, the course providers, maybe even the podcasters can open the passage for you. You can see the path others have taken or followed. They can be an inspiration, but ultimately it's about you unfolding your own myth. Then there was another lovely quote by the contemporary American teacher and poet Mark Nepo. He says, "I keep looking for one more teacher, only to find that fish learn in water and birds learn from the sky." I love that sentiment too. Each time we practice validating our own perspective, we learn to distinguish between wisdom and soundbites. It's by taking one step at a time, making one decision at a time, that we build a foundation of trust in ourselves and in our inherent worthiness. And that, my friends, is true self-improvement. So let me close this week with a question for you to ponder. Being the expert on being you, being your own self-help guru, in the soft voice of your own wisdom, what advice would you offer to yourself right now? Or what would be useful for you to hear right now? So just pause and listen to your own answer, because it will be the wisest one. Until next week. Thank you for listening this week. If you enjoyed this episode and have a moment, please rate, review and subscribe if you haven't already. And maybe you'd like to share it with a friend too. For more information about me, James Sweetman, my coaching services, workshops, books, and for more podcast episodes, be sure to visit jamessweetman.com.